GOB 77. Things ain't what they used to be. The thing about ageing is that you tend to look backward at things with more than a hint of roseate turn to your specs. The good old days of birding are no exception. The blue remembered hills of youth were full of red start song, hunting red-backed shrikes and red squirrels. Red skies blessed every evening, and every birding day was a red letter day. The other thing about ageing is, of course, an ever-declining memory. We tend to remember the good times and consign the bad to a cobweb corner of our minds. Anyone of pensionable age who grew up in the countryside probably collected birds' eggs. Most of us were half-hearted, thank goodness, and after an unlucky few blackbirds had to recount their clutch, we moved on to building dams across streams or playing endless games of marbles or whatever fad was in vogue at the time. Back in the 1950s and early 1960s, gamekeepers set pole traps galore and farmers would think nothing of discharging their shotguns at the retreating backsides of us scrumping lads. So it's not all a bed of roses. Nevertheless, one thing is certain. Habitat was under less pressure from all of today's ills, whether it be too many people tramping over it, too many chemicals polluting it, too much of it under concrete, or too much agribusiness degrading it with monoculture and mixed flora and fauna side. Another aspect of ageing is that time dilates. When you're 9 years old, one summer break from school seems an endless age of freedom. When you get as grey as me, years slip by quicker than a peregrine can stoop. But it's not just my elderly impression that the pace of change has quickened. It's a bare fact. 50 years ago, our local paper mill had a computer, just to work out the wage bill for 150 staff. It had its own temperature-controlled room and was the size of my bungalow. Now my phone has a billion times more processing power than that old computer. But my last phone, scrapped all of a year ago, seemed as archaic and anachronistic as typists and bus conductors. I moved to my current house 17 years ago. I was overjoyed by the new birding opportunities afforded by a seaside patch. I found myself within half an hour of every habitat bar mountains, reed beds, marshland, seashore, woodland, scrubby hillsides and duck-filled lakes were all on my doorstep. Most are still there, but now the houses have moved ever closer, and that which is not deliberately managed for wildlife is impoverished. My right to roam has not only been curtailed by increasingly annoying arthritis, but my birding nooks and crannies fast disappearing. Where once I could pull my car off the road to look over salt marsh to the sea, there are now concrete barriers and residence-only parking. The woodland car parks where I used need not wander more than a few yards to see woodpeckers and hear nightjars are now litter-strewn and frequented by a million dog walkers by day and dozens of steamed-up cars at night. Every quiet beach seems to have half a dozen dog owners, all of whom are intent on encouraging their mutts to chase waders. Every grasshopper-warblish ditch has been drained or dredged or filled with plastic. Where once I could drive a concrete farmer's road, there are now impassable barriers erected to stop the ever-growing horde of selfish idiots who think their old mattress and fridges should grace the hedgerows, if they haven't already been grubbed out or mechanically shorn to a tattered shadow of their former bird-rich glory. 50 or 60 years ago, we roamed across the British countryside and watched birds in its rich, quiet corners. But now the corners are ploughed up and fenced off, and we are discouraged from entering these agribusiness units.